Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI, your community radio for Central Iowa, where we explore people, stories, and events of Central Iowa. I'm your host for this hour, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for listening in. Hey, it's sunny. It's going to get up to 43, and tomorrow it should get up all the way to around 50 degrees. It may be cloudy tomorrow, but the rest of the week we should be enjoying sun, with temperatures in the balmy 50s. With Friday expected to reach almost to 60 degrees. But don't take out your plants, it can still get down below freezing at nights. The weekend should remain warm, but rain is likely. Like they say, in like a lion, out like a lamb. And speaking of lions, here's Mr. Dennis Hart with a summary of the news. Take it away, Dennis.
Thanks very much. It's good to be back in this seat on this Monday. Weather made big news around Iowa again last week, at least the aftermath of weather. All that snowfall we've had and all that rain that melted it. Several waterways in the western part of the state hit record crests, and some cities evacuated residents. A man died Friday night in southwest Iowa after he was caught in floodwaters. More than 10% of the Missouri Valley population, which lies in the southwest corner of Harrison County, got an evacuation order because of flood concerns. The town of Hornick, 30 miles southeast of Sioux City, was evacuated. And this past Saturday, some residents of Mills County in southwest Iowa were ordered to evacuate after multiple levees succumbed to floodwaters. Also last week, a bridge over an ice-jammed Beaver Creek in Johnston collapsed. It was the Trestle Trail Bridge, located north of Interstate 80 near Merle Hay Road. The city had closed the trail leading to the bridge before it collapsed. Another ice jam clogged the Des Moines River near a campsite in Ottumwa, forcing some nearby residents away from their homes. Meanwhile, developments in two prominent Iowa murder cases made news last week. In one case, the homeless man accused of killing former Iowa State University student Celia Barcain Arosemena sent a letter to a judge indicating he may plead guilty. 22-year-old Colin Richards is accused of killing Barcain Arosemena. In the letter to the judge, Richards said, in part, "I would like to take care of my case. I do plead guilty." The judge ordered Richards' lawyers to talk about it. In the other high-profile murder case, prosecutors said the farmhand accused of killing University of Iowa student Molly Tibbetts never indicated he did not understand questions during his interrogation by investigators. The prosecutor's statement came after defendant Christian Bahena Rivera had requested money to use a New York expert to look at interrogation methods. Meanwhile, a University of Iowa student was found dead in a national park in Utah this past Friday after a search that had lasted several days. 33-year-old Jonathan Hoag's body was found at Canyonlands National Park after what officials believe was a 500-foot fall. Hoag was a graduate teaching assistant in Iowa City. He was reported missing on Tuesday. In politics last week, just hours after he announced he was running for the Democratic nomination for president, Beto O'Rourke was busy in Iowa, holding campaign events in the eastern part of the state. Along the way, he answered numerous questions related to climate change, the news media, Social Security, student debt, and whether he has enough experience to be president. Other Democratic presidential hopefuls also made their way to Iowa. New Jersey Senator Cory Booker told Iowa gatherings that Democrats must not be divided as they were in 2016, and that at the end of the day, as he put it, we're family. Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar and former Maryland Congressman John Delaney also made campaign stops in the state. Meanwhile, a new Des Moines Register, CNN Mediacom Iowa poll, showed that 81% of registered Republicans in the state approve of the job Donald Trump is doing as president. 12% disapprove, and 7% aren't sure. At the same time, 40% of registered Republicans say they hope Trump faces a Republican challenger. And the poll also reported that 35% of Iowa Republicans believe climate change poses no real threat to the planet. 44% say climate change is a minor threat. 14% say it's a major threat. Also last week, both of Iowa's Republican U.S. Senators, Charles Grassley and Joni Ernst, voted against a bill that would have blocked President Trump's emergency declaration for border wall funding. That bill passed the Senate 59-41, but the president vetoed it on Friday. Meanwhile, Iowa's new ag gag law sparked a travel boycott and a possible legal challenge. A national animal rights group said it would ask its supporters to boycott vacationing in Iowa. This after Governor Kim Reynolds had signed the so-called ag gag law that makes it a crime for journalists and advocacy groups to go undercover at meatpacking plants, livestock facilities, and other ag operations in order to investigate working conditions and animal welfare. Lawmakers said the law is needed to help protect pig, cattle, and other livestock operations from biosecurity threats. The Animal Legal Defense Fund said it is likely to challenge the new law. There was also word that the state of Iowa had agreed to pay nearly $3 million to settle three sexual harassment or discrimination claims. That's the second straight month that state officials have okayed multi-million-dollar workplace misconduct settlements. Two of the settlements approved last week involve allegations of sexual misconduct in Iowa prisons, while a third case is related to a sexual discrimination claim at Iowa State University. Also last week, a report that two county treasurers in Iowa recently vacationed with a businessman they have supported for a lucrative tax website contract. They stayed at the businessman's Florida beach property for free, an apparent violation of Iowa ethics law. Dubuque County Treasurer Eric Stearman and Winneshiek County Treasurer Wayne Walter confirmed the trip to the Associated Press. They denied any wrongdoing, describing the businessman as a friend with whom they had previously vacationed in Florida. There was also word last week that a developer had proposed building a 349-mile underground transmission line that would carry renewable energy from Iowa to high-demand eastern cities in the U.S. The Direct Connect Development Company wants to build a 2,100-megawatt high-voltage transmission line that would run underground from Mason City to the Chicago area along existing railroad lines, primarily the Canadian Pacific. The project is expected to cost about $2.5 billion and could be operational by 2024. It would need permits from several local, state, and federal agencies. Meanwhile, the city of Des Moines was bombarded with more than 150 claims for pothole-related damage to vehicles this past week. This after a social media post made the rounds saying that if people would request a claim form from the city, get an estimate, take pictures, the city would take care of the rest. But that's not exactly the case. The city will investigate each claim, but officials said Des Moines is not the insurer of its roads. City Attorney Jeff Lester said he's not aware of any claims paid to drivers for pothole-related damage in the past 5 years. Meanwhile, Des Moines University announced last week that it will relocate its West Side campus to West Des Moines because it needs more room. The medical school has signed a letter of intent to buy 90 acres at West Grand Avenue and Jordan Creek Parkway. The university is now located on 24 acres on Grand Avenue in Des Moines. It's one of the 25 biggest medical schools in the United States and the largest in Iowa, with nearly 2,000 students. Still in Des Moines, a teenager was shot and wounded this past Saturday at a house party in the Sheridan Gardens neighborhood. The 17-year-old boy was wounded after an argument broke out at the party. Near Fort Dodge last week, one person died in a crash involving a school bus. It took place on Highway 7 west of Fort Dodge. The driver of one vehicle was pronounced dead. No students were on board the bus when the crash took place. There was also word last week that a 42-year-old Des Moines man had died after a workplace accident at an Altoona manufacturing facility. William George Wilson Jr. was crushed in a machine at Summit Products Incorporated. On the court beat, word that a former Clark County attorney had pleaded guilty to operating her vehicle while intoxicated. It was her second admission to an alcohol-related charge. 43-year-old Michelle Rivera admitted to driving under the influence in an incident that took place last December. She will be sentenced this coming Friday to a year in jail, with all but 2 days suspended and placed on probation for 2 years. Rivera lost her re-election bid as county attorney last November. Meanwhile, a Des Moines man who was found guilty of sexually assaulting a Quick Trip employee will face up to 30 years in prison. 25-year-old Gerald William Miller was convicted of assaulting an employee who was stocking shelves in a Quick Trip on Army Post Road. And a 27-year-old man from Gilbert was sentenced to 4 years in prison last week and 10 years of special supervision after pleading guilty to 2 counts of assault with intent to commit sex abuse. Mason McKay Riley had faced charges in connection with 2 alleged sexual assaults last year at the same Hamilton County campground. And here's a strange story indeed. It's about the man who took off his clothes, all of them, before he stole a vehicle in Des Moines and led police on a foot chase last week. 35-year-old Diamond Dolo was charged with 2 counts of theft and 2 counts of assault on a police officer. Authorities said they responded to a call of a naked man on the roof of an apartment this past Friday morning. But before they got there, Dolo allegedly climbed down from the roof and stole an SUV. Officers found Dolo at an apartment complex where he allegedly had confronted residents and barked like a dog. He allegedly assaulted an officer, tried to steal a police vehicle, then ran away. Police finally captured him, but only after using a taser. Told you it was a strange story. In sports, it was quite a week indeed for the Iowa State University men's and women's basketball teams. First, the women's team played Baylor in the Big 12 championship game last Monday and lost 67-49. Then, the men's team opened Big 12 conference tournament play by defeating Baylor 83-66. Then, the Cyclones played Kansas State and won 63-59. Finally, in the Big 12 championship game on Saturday, the Cyclones defeated Kansas 78-66 for the men's fourth conference championship victory in 6 years. And there you have it, your summary of a quite interesting week indeed in terms of news around Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart, departing now but promising to return well-rested to this very seat on Friday when I'll look at what made news around Ames. Until then, have a great week.
I'm Barry Pope, and I am 84. I love it out in the country.
I am Jane Graham. My husband, Jim, and I live south of Nevada, about 3 miles, and we also live in the country.
We didn't observe St. Patrick's Day much, even though we were totally Irish. I didn't really think of myself as Irish, because my folks didn't celebrate Irish things all the time.
It was always known in our family about the Irish ties and the Irish ancestry of my mom, and we didn't really celebrate. Not until I met my husband, Jim, who is about as green as the 40 shades. And he has been the one that has sparked the Irish heritage and our celebration of it. You know, here we come from the Irish settlement way back down there, and then to find out the Graham families came from Ireland. You know, it's just how Irish can we all get? But I did hear all the stories of the grandparents coming from Ireland. And
the one grandparent, Jeremiah, and his wife came to Wisconsin. They did not like it up there. It wasn't good farming ground because it was too cold, it was too wet, and it was such a short season. They came to Iowa, where their daughter had married somebody down at the Irish settlement at Cummings, Iowa. And then I have a grandmother who came with her mother. Her father had come and was going to send the money for her and the baby to be, and she had the baby, but she died. The mother died. And friends took the baby then because she was gone. And they waited in New York for her husband to come. They waited and waited, but he never showed up. And they raised her. Then she got to Iowa, and I can't quite remember how it was she got to Iowa in the Irish settlement at Cumming, Iowa. Gee whiz, there was a great community. I can remember my mother talking about the Breams and the Cutlers, and, you know, they knew them at church. They were all very religious and kept all the holy days, and but they weren't close to them of farming.
A lot of the thread was the farming. I mean, it was real farm. They had the working horse.
Right.
They all farmed with horses.
They weren't into the pleasure riding. Mm-hmm. No.
And then in 19, oh, probably about 25, they bought a Fordson tractor. And that was a big deal. My grandparents were born there in the Irish settlement at Cumming, Iowa, and were baptized and confirmed and everything. There was a lot of Irish in Cummings. There were mostly Irish people. My mother had 6 brothers. There were 7 children. She was the second.
And Grandma and Grandpa and the kids, they moved from Cummings, or, you know, the Irish settlement there, up here, midway between Bondurant here and Ankeny, because Grandpa had the opportunity to buy better land. Down there at the Irish settlements, it's kind of roly, you know, the farm ground was okay, but they didn't have rocks and all that, which would have been the problem up in Wisconsin. But this was all flat land and really great ground, and so he moved up here. She was a junior in high school when they moved.
Oh, and I thought I was going to die, leaving all my friends at Narwhal, and I was a junior?
Yeah. Well, a friend of hers, two of them got on the school bus, and later on, a gal who befriended Mom says, "We were so surprised because there were only two of you getting on the bus. We'd heard that there were 10 kids."
I was a Catholic kid at a very Protestant Bondurant.
Yeah, unfortunately, when any discrimination that was felt was over the Catholic-Protestant issue. That was a real contention.
There weren't too many of us. Mm-hmm. In my class, there was 1, 2, 3.
And talk about the culture, talk about the square dance.
In 1934, I was 5 years old. My dad was cleaning up. He'd made extra places to put corn. 1933 was a good crop, and he didn't have enough room in the corn crib.
Because 1934 was no crop at all. It was drought out completely.
My dad put the hogs out into the cornfield to eat up whatever they could find because there was no crop to be harvested. And anyway, my uncle says, "What are you doing with those boards?" And he says, "Well, I'm cleaning them up. Maybe another year will be good, and I'm going to stack them up and I'll save them." And he said, "Why don't we have a barn dance?" Oh, my dad thought, oh, golly, he was no dancer. But my mother thought, oh, this is great. So between Uncle Walt and my mother, Daddy didn't have a lot to do, so he worked on this, and Walt would stop by and help after his job. And they had the family. They did it 2 weekends. Us kids, there was 3 of us. I have 2 brothers, and I'm in the middle. And none of us remember the dance. We went to sleep, but we remember the getting ready for it.
It was your grandmother that played the fiddle.
Oh, yeah. She played the fiddle.
Mom, she's so Irish, she should speak with a brogue. And she should. She's just about all 100% Irish.
Tribute to the Iowans of Irish heritage in the wake of St. Patrick's Day. You heard the voices of Betty Pope and her daughter Jane Graham describing how the Irish arrived in Iowa, especially around the Irish settlement in the town of Cumming in rural Madison County, just southwest of Des Moines. Although the Irish pioneer heritage of Cumming has faded, that town does remain the home of St. Patrick's Catholic Church, which is listed on the National Registry of Historic Places. Pope John Paul II actually visited that little country church while he was on his first pastoral visit to the United States in 1979. And this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I am your host for this hour, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for joining us on Local Talk. Last Friday, several hundred ISU and high school students and the Ames community members gathered on the ISU campus as part of the International Climate Strike Action. KHOI's Preston Buras brings you the story.
This is the climate strike here at Iowa State University.
At 11 a.m. on Friday, March 15th, students, faculty, and normal citizens gathered outside Puck's library on Iowa State campus to protest the inaction surrounding climate change. Inspired by the work of 16-year-old Swedish climate activist Greta Thunberg, students all over the world skipped class to demonstrate their commitment to building a sustainable and green future.
We are striking for 100% renewable energy by 2030. According to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, we only have 11 years left before the damages of climate change are irreversible and before we can limit the destruction to below 1.5 degrees Celsius. We are calling for Iowa State University to commit to 100% renewable energy by 2030. We are calling for them to adopt the student government resolution that calls for 100% renewable electricity by 2035. And we are calling for our local, national, and international leaders to join the fight against climate change to limit global warming to below 1.5 degrees Celsius. Are y'all ready?
The strike, which saw a crowd gathered around the steps of Park's library, was organized entirely by students and student organizations concerned with encroaching climate issues. Many campus organizations formed coalitions and worked to make the event a success.
I am Hector Arbuckle. I was the lead organizer, which essentially meant that I was just part of climate reality, and I was the person who, really, it was a team effort. I was just the person who was like the person who reached out to like the official climate strike people, who were who was a group of high school students. We all worked together to put on this strike, this awesome strike, and we're part of Climate Reality, which is an organization at Iowa State. We have partners in Conservation Club. The Wind Energy Student Organization sent out an email on our behalf. And we're also partnering with basically Greta Thunberg herself, because she is the one who called for this march. She wasn't directly involved with our local version of the march, but this is all under her call. So climate change is unfortunately the defining issue of our times. We are heading towards 4 degrees Celsius of warming at our current rate, or even higher, because we continue to burn fossil fuels without any regard to the extreme danger that it causes to our planet and to our society. So the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change last year released a report saying that we only have 11 years left, that's until 2030, to drastically reduce our carbon emissions in order to reduce global warming to below 1.5 degrees Celsius. If it gets higher than that, it will have drastic and destructive consequences for our agriculture, for our forests, for our coral reefs, for our cities, for everything. So we really need to take action immediately.
Greta Thunberg, the 16-year-old Swedish student who inspired the worldwide protests, was an abiding presence in many of the speeches given outside of Park's library.
One of the things that she said before the European Parliament, she was speaking before the European Parliament, and the students who were striking in Belgium were right behind her because they did massive strikes in Belgium. She said, those people, those politicians responsible for the inaction for decades on this issue, well, their legacy will be the greatest political failure in all of history, and they will be considered the greatest villains of all of history because they'll probably kill more than Stalin and Hitler together. And that's true. I mean, she's just telling it like it is, and she has a habit of doing that in front of adults who have power. She's not afraid of them.
Organized by Iowa State organization Climate Reality, one of around 200 environmentally focused student groups, the event drew a sizable crowd, with passing students stopping by to hear the speakers. Not all the crowd was just students, however. Many faculty members joined in and gave speeches as well, including Professor Emeritus at Iowa State and member of the Ames Climate Action Team, Dr. Irv Klaus.
I first became aware of climate change back in 1989 when James Hansen spoke before a Senate committee in Washington, D.C. and informed the U.S. Congress that climate was, that the globe was warming and that we had to do something. This was 1989. Look how long it's taken to even get to this point. Just in the last year, everyone, I think, in the world has been inspired by Greta Thunberg, the 16-year-old student who began striking every Friday by sitting in front of the Swedish parliament with a sign that said in Swedish, that climate was changing. So one of the leaders of the National Youth Movement for Climate has said that we can't do things that are politically possible. We have to do things that are necessary. And so it's necessary that we do these things by reducing our emissions, by sequestering carbon. And so we've got to really start moving fast. And it's now become a real crisis.
The number of organizations that came together for this demonstration created a diverse pool of perspectives, with several different specializations coming together and talking about different ways we could reduce our impact on the environment.
My name's Andrew Dirks. So it's a commentary that I have is this event is very important, and a lot of people here are talking about energy. And so, you know, we want to get rid of coal, we want to get rid of oil, things like that. And that's great. And what I like to say is adding on to that, something that can help the environment is biodiversity. So pretty much everywhere in America, we have a lot of homes that have lawns, and we have grass in almost all public places. And grass is just not great. It doesn't really do much for the environment, and it oftentimes like hurts the soil as well. And so like to replace lawns and grass with like other types of plants and stuff to create this biodiversity is something that would be really helpful. And it's pretty easy. Like if you have command over any space and you can just put different plants there, like that would be really helpful to the environment, including like, and planting trees too, like that's super big.
Even with all the perspectives present at the event, the goals and plans for the group were seemingly unanimous, with everyone in agreement that swift and radical action was needed to change our current course.
It's only through major action that we are going to be able to confront the climate crisis. We need to transform our society. We need to get off of fossil fuels. We need to transition to a 100% renewable energy economy. This will not be easy. We have a lot to go. We need more better technology. We need better storage systems. And we need a cultural shift so that we can work together to transform to 100% renewable energy. However, we can do it. We have to do it. So we will do it.
My name is Tony Slew, and I'm a member of the Climate Reality Campus Corps, and I'm also the Director of Sustainability for Student Government.
Among the specific topics of demonstration was a push to pass a resolution in Iowa State student government to increase the university's renewable energy and decrease its reliance on fossil fuels. Tony Slew, a member of both Climate Reality and the Director of Sustainability in Student Government, attended the event.
I'm here because I think climate change is the most important issue facing our generation and our society as a whole. I think it's important for people to show that they actually care about this, and that's something that our legislators should take action about. So Climate Reality is a student org. It's a chapter of a national org that's working towards 100% renewable energy. So our chapter specifically is trying to get the university to commit to being 100% renewable with respect to electricity by the year 2030. So on the student government side, we're supporting that with a resolution that we're hoping to get passed, so asking the university to be increase their purchase electricity to be 100% renewable, and then also purchase renewable energy credits to achieve carbon neutrality by 2035.
My name is Carlos Santos.
Among the student speakers was the Iowa State student Carlos Santos, a student who had firsthand witnessed the dangers of climate change when he was forced to transfer to Iowa State from Puerto Rico after Hurricane Maria.
I am a junior in political science, and I'm a transfer student from Puerto Rico. I transfer here because of Hurricane Maria. I don't know why I wanted to talk, but I feel like I have to say something about it. So my apologies if this is controversial. In Puerto Rico, we were fighting for a free educational accessible platform. We're fighting for an open, you know, college for all of the fellow Puerto Ricans and the next generations. And then during that process, I came up with the feminist movement. And then we were fighting also for, we were fighting against violence against women, and specifically also the LGBTQI movement as well. And we were fighting for transgender rights. And then we were fighting also for so many other things. And I realized how intersectional this is. And it was not until the Hurricane Irma happened, and then 6 days after that, we have Hurricane Maria. And then we realized how bad climate change was. Do you know how many people die in Hurricane Maria only in an island? 3,000 people die. And yes, there's a lot of negligence from local and federal government in that response, in that recovery process. But also, there's a lot of repercussions about climate change.
Ending his speech to the crowd of protesters and passers-by, Carlos ended by singing a song from Puerto Rico dedicated to the earth.
I'm not a singer, but I would like to sing a song. It's in Spanish, and it says, "The forest is full of life, and the Pachamama, the Mother Earth, breathing." So it says like this. El bosque está lleno de vida. La Pachamama respira. El bosque está lleno de vida. La Pachamama respira. El bosque está lleno de vida. La Pachamama respira. And that's from all the Puerto Rican community who sing to the Mother Earth and the ocean. Thank you so much.
If you haven't already, we're circulating a petition from our friends at Ames Climate Action Team. Michael and a bunch of other people have it. Basically, everyone who's waving it up right now, please sign this petition. It's to get Ames to adopt a climate action joint team so that we can work on getting to 100% renewable energy by 2030, which we absolutely need to do. And right now I'm going to shout out to our friends at Ames Climate Action Team. They're an amazing group here in Ames, Iowa. Irv Kloss is here from them, and we've got teachers, students, university students, high school students. We've got just normal people who are working normal jobs. We've got professors. We've got everybody. We're all working together to get Ames, the city of Ames, to commit to 100% renewable energy. So our meetings are the second Monday of every month at 7 p.m. in the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, which is on the Green Line. So we would really be happy if you guys would go to our friends' meeting. Climate Reality here at Iowa State meets at 6 p.m. every Thursday in Carver. And if you want, you can ask any of the people here that are holding signs, and they can add you to our GroupMe. We would be super happy to have you. And also, if you would mind signing the Ames Climate Action Team's petition, that would also be great for all of us. I am part of Climate Reality at Iowa State University. We are a group that is pushing for Iowa State University to get to 100% renewable energy by 2030. We're working with student government, with student groups, with the city government, and with faculty to get this change done and to build a coalition that can accomplish this movement. It is more than us. It is all of us. It is our planet. It is our cousins in the animal and plant world. It is our brothers and sisters across the world in places where, like Florida, Bangladesh, Eastern China, that are going to flood if we do not reduce global warming to below 1.5 degrees Celsius.
Because I love you, I sing for you. Because I love you, I sing for you. Pachamama, Madre Tierra. Pachamama, nuestra abuela. I sing for you. 'cause I love you. I sing for you. Pachamama, Madre Tierra. Pachamama, nuestra abuela.
This is Local Talk on KHY Community Radio. I'm your host, Ursula Rudenberg. This is usually the time of the month when we have the Chamber of Commerce come by to visit us. Drew Kemp is here, Executive Director of the Ames Main Street.
That's correct, yeah. Thank you, Ursula. Thanks for having us.
Before we get started, people are very familiar with the terms Ames Cultural District.
Oh, yeah. We transitioned sometime last year. We did a rebranding with Main Street Iowa, which is the program that oversees all of the Main Street programs throughout the state. And then they also make sure that the national standards are adhered to through the state down into the local level. And we worked with them to do a rebrand from the Main Street Cultural District to Ames Main Street. And the reason it went from the cultural district to Ames Main Street is because you do have to make sure that Main Street is included in the name. But mm-hmm. we thought it just made a little bit more sense and it was a little bit easier for people to understand where we were talking about if it was just Ames Main Street. But then it's also important to note that Ames Main Street is the program that oversees the operations of this of what we're doing in downtown Ames.
So Ames Main Street is not a duplication of the downtown cultural district. That name has kind of transitioned into Ames Main Street.
Yes, it was okay. A rebranding. So there's been a transition to Ames Main Street from the Main Street Cultural District.
All right. Now that we've gotten that clear, you brought somebody with you.
Would you
introduce your guest?
Yeah, I'm proud to introduce my guest. Our events coordinator, Ames, is Sarah Dvorsky. This is her third week on the job, so she keeps coming back. We're always happy to see that. So she started on March 4th, and she's overseeing all the events for Ames Main Street, and then she's also assisting on the chamber side as well.
Hi, Sarah. Welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome to KHOI. So tell us a little bit who you are.
I'm an Iowa State grad that graduated just a couple years ago, studied event management when I was in college, and just have always had a huge passion for Ames. It's just ever since I was a student, really just felt at home.
Where are you from?
I'm originally from Iowa City. After school, spent a couple years out in Seattle and then downtown Des Moines, and then I've been most recently just at Iowa State. So I'm excited to get started on some of these upcoming events we have and just continue this rich tradition of successful events.
Tell us a little bit about your vision for events in downtown Ames.
I have a huge passion for community and feeling that sense of community for everyone. So just continuing to host events with that sense of community and just keep building them up from where they are.
Events has really become an important part of the development of downtown Ames, hasn't it, Drew?
Yes, it very much has. That's always one of the biggest pieces of what Ames Main Street does as a program, is really making sure that we have community events, things like, you know, your sidewalk sales, your DIY days, your music walk, art walk, 4th of July parade, things along those lines. But then we also have the more large-scale events like the Foodies and Brew that's coming up on May 3rd and the Oktoberfest that's coming up in mid-October this year. And those are the ones where you're getting more of the masses, so to speak, into downtown Ames to celebrate the area.
Talk a little bit about why public events like that are important to building a sense of place in a community.
Well, downtown Ames, or Ames Main Street, or any Main Street in a community for that matter, is always the heart of the community. When Ames was first settled, this was always the Commerce District right on the railroad line. It's just continued to grow from that. So this has always been a gathering place for the community, and that's something that we want to try to make sure we're building on with these kind of events, is to celebrate that sense of community and that this commerce center, this commercial center of the city of Ames, that really is a main attraction point to a lot of people. Whenever we get visitors coming to town, this is one of the places they're going to come visit. When we have conferences coming to town, they will come to downtown Ames because they know it's a premier location within the community. Some people may not know exactly what all is down here unless you get them down here for an event like that, and they realize that there's XYZ store, and they become a much more frequent visitor of said store.
You have been able to see definitively that it's made a difference for the businesses down here?
We do know that the programming that Ames Main Street is providing, yes, is mm-hmm. providing positive impacts for the businesses.
Okay, well, you mentioned a few events, Music Walk and Foodies and Brew. Sarah, would you talk a little bit about both of those?
Yeah, so Music Walk is going to be on April 26th. It'll just feature a lot of local businesses and local musicians in those storefronts, just giving people an opportunity to walk around, experience both businesses, but also musicians as well. If you're interested in hosting a musician or you are interested in performing during Music Walk, go ahead, check out our website, amesdowntown.org. There is an opportunity to sign up on the Music Walk page. Then on May 3rd, we have Foodies and Brew from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. out at the airport hangar to check out some more local music, but also local food and local breweries. Those tickets will also be available on our website on the Foodies and Brew page. Then in June, we will host Art Walk, which is also downtown Ames. That will be, again, local businesses, but this time we will have local artists that can include painters, jewelry makers, photographers, woodworkers, and sculptors. That'll be located in Ames storefronts as well on June 7th.
And one fun thing I want to add too, on June 7th, we're actually going to start an event called First Friday. It's not a formal Ames Main Street event, but it is something that we are kind of working through with the creator. Then those are downtown business owners. They've kind of banded together to really create this event that really kind of focuses on the beauty of the arts and cultural district that we have here. So we'll have some events on the street throughout the year, and it'll be on the first Friday of every month. So watch for additional information regarding those events as well. They'll be in parking lots. They will be on sidewalks. Mm-hmm. They'll be up and down Main Street.
You recently got an award, the 2019 Main Street Iowa Award.
Yes, back on last Friday, so March 8th, a week and a half ago, they had the Main Street Iowa Awards down at the Scottish Rite Consistory in downtown Des Moines, and we were recognized for a few things. The award that we won, it was actually called, it's kind of a tongue twister, the Itty Bitty Nitty Gritty Award. And what that was for was for our planting of sweet potatoes and other vegetables on Main Street. And what was really good about that program is not only did anyone who planted some of the produce or some of the vegetables was able to take it for themselves, obviously, because they had helped grow it, but we donated a vast amount of it to Food at First and other organizations that help those in need.
And there was no vandalism to the gardens.
Not that we recall, no.
That's very impressive.
That's one of those things I think people, it was a community pride kind of thing, and no one that we know of messed with them at all.
So the award was kind of for the paying attention to the fine details?
Yes, very much so, which was inherent in the name, yeah.
Very nice.
It was also nice, too. We are actually celebrating our 10-year anniversary as a Main Street Iowa community. So that's something that we were recognized in the program for as well. And that's something that we'll be celebrating here at some point at a to-be-determined date as well.
And then also there was an award for Emmerhoff's for shoe store, which is really great shoe store.
Oh, yes. The very great shoe store. They've been on downtown in downtown Ames for a very long time. And what's really cool about them as well is that Mark currently has run the organization for some time, but he's passing it on to his son. It's a family business. And that's something that they take extreme pride in, and understandably so. And we are very proud to be able to bestow Mark Peterson, the patriarch kind of the organization right now, with the Leadership Award. He donates countless hours of his time to Ames Main Street, and we are really excited that he was able to be recognized for that at the beginning of the ceremony with a certificate that's signed by the governor and lieutenant governor and Debbie Durham. He got to get a picture taken with all three of them, and it's just a very nice recognition for someone who's done a lot of good in the community and specifically downtown Ames for a number of years.
What kind of work does he do? I mean, what does he contribute?
He volunteers a lot of time to Main Street events and to whether it's barricade watching at the 4th of July, whatever it may be. He's always one of those first people to volunteer, and he just takes extreme pride in his store and his storefront as well. He's just someone that really is kind of a leader in Main Street, and I know a lot of people look to him as to kind of how he does things.
Yeah, he's also provide continuity too. I don't remember a time when Emmerhoff's wasn't there. It's been part of Main Street for a long, long time.
And then, like I said, with the continuity piece, what's really cool too is they have that continuity and succession plan in place for his son to then take it over, which is kind of special too, because a lot of times you don't necessarily see that sometimes anymore. You don't see that kind of organized succession, and it's really nice to see that they've been able to do that and will be able to do that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything else that you want to bring to the air about the downtown district?
Just make sure that you're watching our social media and our website. We're going to continually update events, and there's going to be new information coming out about things like First Friday and our 10th anniversary celebration, things along those lines. That stuff will continue to be pushed out via the website and social media, so make sure that you're watching those things and just keeping up to date. And as always, please make sure you're participating in the events. We take a lot of pride in the events that we put on. Sarah's doing a really good job organizing them, so please, hopefully the weather will cooperate. That's the one thing we can't control, but that's part of the reason why we're at the airport hangar as well. Yeah, please just continue to keep updated with what we have going on, and please participate when and where you can.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I've been speaking with Drew Kemp, Executive Director of Ames Main Street, and Sarah Dvorsky, who is the new events coordinator, and we look forward to seeing the events as they occur this summer. Sounds like it's going to be a colorful and enjoyable summer. And you have been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Local Talk was engineered by Cynthia McClure. And our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m., and you can also hear the show on our homepage at khoifm.org. Later today, KHOI broadcasts at 89.1 FM. It can also be heard online at khoifm.org. We're going to go out with a turkey vulture. Is that okay with you? Okay. I'm talking to Cynthia, our engineer. She's ready. So we're going to go out with the turkey vulture. And as you listen, please remember that your participation as audience is what makes KHOI local radio possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio. And let's go out with the turkey vulture.
Phenology is recording nature's happenings when they occur. The first bluebird of spring or the last nighthawk of autumn are noted in a journal for future reference and comparison to previous years. Today's phenology is about turkey vultures. If you've gone looking for raptors on a clear day, your heart has probably leaped and skipped a beat at the sight of a large soaring bird in the distance, perhaps an eagle or an osprey. But if it's soaring with its wings angled in a V-shape or dihedral, it's likely a turkey vulture. An eagle's wing plane is much flatter or straight, whereas the turkey vulture is V-shaped. Vultures ride thermals in the sky and use their keen sense of smell to find fresh carcasses. They are a consummate scavenger, cleaning up the countryside one bite of their hooked beak at a time and never mussing a feather on their bald heads. With a body length of 2.5 feet and a 6-foot wingspan, it is surprising that their body weight is only 2 to 4 pounds. Turkey vultures are birds of prey, like other hawks and eagles, yet their feet are weak and useless for grabbing prey. Their beaks, however, are powerful enough to rip through the hide of a dead deer or cow. They could smell carrion that's less than 12 to 24 hours old from more than a mile away. They want mammal meat as fresh as possible, preferably that of a plant-eating mammal, and will not eat extremely rotted carcasses. They are not a threat to livestock or pets. When searching for a meal, they often fly low over an area, using their sight and acute sense of smell to find the food. Very few birds have a sense of smell. Vultures are social feeders, which means many might join together to feed on a large carcass with other scavenger birds, such as eagles, hawks, and crows, that might join the feast as well. Turkey vultures often are called buzzards and are found throughout much of the United States and Central and South America, although they are not really buzzards. Buzzards are hawks of the genus Buteo that live mainly in the British Isles. In some areas of our country, however, vultures are commonly called buzzards. This term was probably used by early settlers who arrived in this country, saw our vultures, and thought they were buzzards. Turkey vultures' scientific name is Cathartes aurora, which is Latin for cleansing breeze or purifier. Like all other vultures, the turkey vulture has a bald head. This is so that bits of carrion, or dead meat, do not adhere to the skin as they would to feathers. The turkey vulture often flying low to the ground to pick up the scent of ethyl mercaptan, a gas produced by the beginnings of decay in dead animals. The olfactory lobe of its brain, responsible for processing smells, is particularly large compared to that of other animals. This heightened ability to detect odors allows it to search for carrion below the forest canopy out of sight of these winged wonders. Turkey vultures play an important role in the health of our ecosystems. As nature's cleanup crews, they help eliminate rotting carcasses, which helps control the spread of certain diseases and generally helps the air smell a lot better. Due to their stomach acids, they can feed on animals that have died from such things as botulism, anthrax, salmonella, and cholera without causing the vulture to become ill. In fact, their stomach acids actually kill the bacteria and toxins. If a group of vultures consume an infected carcass, the harmful bacteria or toxin is destroyed so that it can no longer spread to other animals or humans. They have been documented killing very weak or very sick animals, but this is very rare. They are not a threat to livestock or pets. Though the vultures prefer to feed on medium to large animals such as deer or sheep, they can be found in roads feeding on roadkill animals as small as squirrels and possums. Like so many other wildlife species, turkey vultures were negatively affected by the use of the pesticide DDT in the late 1950s and 60s. Use of the chemical was banned in 1972 in North America. Today, the population is stable and even increasing for turkey vultures. 40 years ago, it was rare to discover nesting turkey vultures in hollow logs or in the second story of an abandoned farmhouse lacking windows. Today, they are common and widespread in the Americas, and evidence suggests that they are expanding their range northward. This could be because of climate change or because they are able to survive in human-altered landscapes, which may now provide them with more food sources than were present historically. A steady supply of dead pigs at a confinement animal feeding operation, or CAFO, has been added to our landscape. Vultures are one of the most misunderstood and least appreciated birds in the avian world. Many of the opinions formed by people are based on the way vultures are portrayed in movies and cartoons. Many believe that when vultures are circling overhead, they are waiting for an animal to die. Vultures certainly circle and can soar for up to 6 hours without flapping, but they are simply using the thermals to move from place to place and testing air quality for decaying carrion. If on their nest, the vultures will hiss and regurgitate, accurately hitting their target up to 6 feet away. The smell of their vomit is so bad that this defensive move is generally very successful
in driving any predators away.
Another belief that some people have is that they are dirty, disgusting birds, when in fact, if there is water source available, most vultures will enjoy a bath after a meal. Groups of vultures are called kettles when they soar upward in spirals. Kettles appear as boiling cauldrons of vultures. Each spring and autumn, turkey vultures gather at traditional roosting sites each evening.
The Ledges State Park, west of Ames, on the Des Moines River, is one of those destinations.
So as early as mid-March, the turkey vultures can return and start cleaning up the roadways from all the roadkill.
And that's our phonology for today. This is Pat Schlarba.
This environmental update is sponsored by the Outdoor Alliance of Story County, Story County's Conservation's Friends Group, working to enhance outdoor recreation, education, and conservation. Information can be found at oasco.org.
Funding for KJOI is provided in part by the Iowa State Center, presenting the San Francisco Symphony, March 29th, 7:30 p.m. More information can be found at center.iastate.edu.